Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. In this episode of the podcast, Nick tries to weigh in 7 fish in a tournament, Josh forgets his life jacket, and the guys get a unique behind-the-scenes perspective from One Bass U.S. Open tournament director, Billy Eaton. Stick around, guys. You don't want to miss this one. Hey guys, I want to bring you a quick message from SmartLink Alarm. An Arizona-based company with over 30 years experience, SmartLink Alarm provides custom security systems for your home or business. What we really dig about these guys is that they have no monthly contracts and super affordable monthly rates. From now until April 1st, we've got a fun promotion going on with these guys. Give them a call, let them know your security concerns. Mention the Angler's Happy Hour podcast and you'll receive a free quote. Getting that free quote will enter you into a drawing for a free guided trip with one of us. If you're lucky, Rob will be your guide. If you're unlucky, it'll be myself or Nick. We appreciate the fact that we have listeners across the entire country, but this promo is going to be geared towards local Arizona listeners with SmartLink Alarm servicing Arizona residents and businesses only. To enter and receive your free quote, call 480-844-0333. Or visit them online at smartlinkalarm.com. Thanks, guys. Nick, are you going to eat that beef stick into the mic?
So today on the Angler's Happy Hour.
I've heard some podcasts in the past where the guest just, there was one on Joe Rogan was interviewing a dude and he busted out like one of those Nature Valley granola bars.
Just crunching away.
Rogan just let him.
That almost makes it kind of funny.
It was. The guy was, it was unbelievable. The guy was just like on the biggest podcast there is and just had the nerve to just be like, you know, he's one of those bodybuilder type guys. And, you know,
he just needed to eat at that minute.
An hour without eating, dude. It's like they start having anxiety, you know.
Crazy.
He called him out like right in the He's like, come on, dude. You really have to eat this thing right now. Rob brought us some beef sticks from, what is this, Boyd's Elk or is this, are they deer?
No, it's from Boyd's Elk. We got like 50 pounds of sticks, so just obviously just part of it, but yeah, that's, we got the jalapeno cheddar ones that I won't bring to Nick because for some reason Nick doesn't eat cheese.
Yeah, fun tidbit about me, I don't eat cheese.
That's so weird
how I maintain this feminine figure. And one time Rob was kind enough to bring us a big old slab of it. Was that one deer or elk?
That was deer with, yeah, you thought the cheese was fat in there.
Yeah, because I'm an enlightened foodie, and I thought that they had added a lot of pork fat to it to make it taste less gamey. No, that was just sharp cheddar.
Yeah, but you were eating it like crazy, and dude, all of a sudden you were like, you went to the bathroom to throw up or something, huh?
Yeah, I need a recommendation or a referral for a good hypnotist, because I'm sure that this aversion to cheese is purely mental. Because I eat it, and I eat
100%.
It, and I eat it. And then someone's like, hey, that's cheese. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I can't eat it. I just need
mouthful.
To be hypnotized.
He put it right back out.
Dude, I just need like a comfy couch, a few candles, dim lighting, and then someone hypnotizing me, and presto.
I think we went to Jersey Mike's right after that and got him a cheese on a sandwich on purpose, right?
Yes.
And then he took it home, and I'm sure on the way home, he's just throwing cheese out the window.
With friends like you, I'm telling
you. Yeah, what are you going to do?
I'm going to start a new hobby, new passion in life.
That's hilarious. So anyways, thanks guys for joining us again. We've got a pretty special episode today. We've actually got Bill Eagan. He is the tournament director for all the One Bass tournaments, you know, throughout the year around the country. They're primarily a Western circuit, and they do a couple different species, but, you know, what we're most familiar with and what they're really, their bread and butter is, are the three bass-centric tournaments, the U.S. Open, the Arizona Open, and the California Open. Billy's been running these tournaments for like 10 years and he's had huge success. When I first started fishing these One Bass tournaments when I was younger, the economy wasn't nearly as good as it is now. And he'll give that a lot of the credit, but a lot of it,
that's not it.
He's just being humble.
Yeah. He worked hard.
Yeah. He's worked really hard. And these field sizes in our Western tournaments have almost tripled since I started. I mean, the first U.S. Open I ever fished had less than 100 boats and they capped it at 280 boats. They opened registration, mind you, the tournament's in 10 months, and they opened registration and capped it at 280 boats.
That's just insane.
So,
mind-blowing.
Yeah. He attributes it to the economy, and I mean, there's been plenty of tournament directors that have dealt with good economies and haven't
done it. And couldn't put it together like that.
Yeah, yeah. From what I understand, he was calling guys when he was, you know, trying to fill spots and just getting on the phone and, you know.
Making it happen.
Yeah, Josh knows firsthand. I mean, he would call you and try to talk you into signing up, right?
Oh yeah, if he had your phone number, or if he saw a picture of you holding up a bass on Facebook, he was getting your phone number and he was calling you and getting you into the U.S. Open. So people just don't do that, man. No one does that anymore.
No, that's awesome, though.
That's why he's been a standout.
Yeah, I fished one bass in the early 90s into the early 2000s, and it was – they're always good tournaments, you know, but never had numbers like that at all. So pretty impressive what he's done.
Do you guys know what is the entry for the U.S. Open like last year?
16. What does it cost?
Yeah.
Yeah, $1,600.
$1,600
for a pro, and then 600? I think amateurs. Yep, 600, yeah. I think. So.
Cool. Yeah, so I mean, it's.
That's a great opportunity for what's. They're almost giving $164,000 away to first place. You can't, I mean, one, you can just enter it, right? You don't have to qualify to enter it.
Yeah.
Anything that's paying anywhere near that is a qualification process and, you know, five times the entry fees.
Yep.
You know, so.
Then on the co-angler side, you have a really good shot. You know, fishing behind someone who really knows what's up, right? I mean, talk about
sure.
a $600 investment
like
in shortening your learning curve.
3-day guide trip for people.
Right? I mean, there's an off chance that you might get someone that you don't gel with or whatever, but odds are, you know, you're going to be watching somebody, you know, break down some water, some conditions. You'll definitely learn something.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, great opportunity. Hopefully the wind doesn't blow if you're a number.
Yeah, yeah right. Hold
yeah,
on
that's,
tight.
That's the only thing, you know, but it is what it is. And he actually... Last year, or the year before this year, so it'd be 2018, they had a super windy day, and he called the day off. And everyone was really happy about it. There were very few people that were upset. And
yeah, so, Mead is big water.
Huge.
It is. And that's never happened before. You know, in the past, some of the directors are just like,
go for it.
Put your rain suits. I remember my first tournament at Lake Mead. It's howling, dude, howling. I'm like 18 years old. It was a one-bass tournament. This is, 12, 13 years ago before Billy was there. And 30-mile-an-hour wind. It's in, like, the spring, so it's a lot colder. And I'm just, like, praying they cancel it. I didn't know how to drive in that stuff.
Yeah.
And he's, like, the tournament director goes out, and he goes, I'm just going to check out the conditions, you know. And he comes back
finger,
around the corner.
Hold it up in the wind.
The boat's completely soaked, and he'd just been out there for a second. He's like, I would recommend everyone put their rain suits on. We're going to be going in 10 minutes.
Grab a bucket
raining.
In case your bilge pump doesn't work so you can bail out the waves coming over the side.
Crazy. Just go for it. See what happens.
Yeah, but you're going to have to surf back to shore.
Yeah, the guys I feel for in that situation are the non-boaters. There's nothing worse than riding in a boat. If you're driving, you have control, you know
what's
going to
happen.
You have
something to like, yeah, control.
It's just a different mindset.
A steering wheel is a nice, comfortable thing to hold on to. Sometimes on the passenger side of a bass boat, you get handles in weird places. You're kind of like a bull rider, right? Like maybe one between your legs down low, one over here.
And you probably hold on too tight.
Yeah.
Tense up, and the driver is just driving. So it's a little different. But.
Yeah, co-angling life.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's a great tournament, great opportunity, and props to Billy. So we're going to be talking to him. I wanted to give a little background on him and just how successful he's been. But it hasn't like always been an easy road for him. He came in 10 years ago, and his first tournament as tournament director, they had quite the scenario. And this like was a really, really big deal in the fishing world when it happened. They caught a cheater, basically. The guy's name was Mike Hart. And he'll tell the story when he comes on here, but it was a wild scenario. The guy, Mike Hart, he was dominating a lot of the Southern California team tournament trails for years and years. I mean, he was kind of the guy down there.
Making big
one
money.
One of the guys, anyways, for sure. Yeah,
yeah,
he was.
As much money as you can make in a local circuit, he was making
just cash and checks.
Yeah, yeah, and just stealing money, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And so talk about baptism by fire, right? So...
Yeah,
so
seriously.
Billy jumps into that fire, huh?
Yeah, his first tournament, first, you know, Pro-Am tournament, the U.S. Open, biggest Western tournament. This is what he has to deal with the first time. So after that, you know, things got pretty easy.
It's all downhill after that, probably, right?
Exactly. So pretty gnarly. Wanted to give everyone a background on that a little bit. Did you guys – so, like, obviously that's from the other side of things, but when you guys were getting into tournament fishing, like, you know, your first year you fished, what were some of, like, the – did you have any, like, crazy, moments, you know, like you said, baptisms like that? Or just, like, funny things that would happen to you when you were new?
Well, as the silence descends down, we all know my life is a tragic comedy. And well, I'll start laughing because you guys know this story. But early on, so Josh was kind enough to kind of give me a soft entry into the tournament fishing world. And so one of my first few tournaments, it was a TBF tournament at Alamo. And I didn't really know the the wisdom of using cold tags. And one of the wisdom is that if you're wisdoms of that is that if you're really catching them, you can kind of figure out if you've got five fish in the well or not, because kind of should only have five cold tags. So my previous, this is maybe the fourth or fifth tournament I'd fished, and I had been struggling mightily in those previous tournaments. And then you go to Alamo, and back then, this is 7-8 years ago, the fishing was good enough that even if you had no clue what you were doing, standing on the back of a boat, you'd catch them. So suffice to say that a few more than five green friends made it into the live well. Didn't quite realize that until it was time to put your fish in the weigh-in bag and take the long hike up the ramp to the scales, and a few too many finned friends took the trip with me.
It was seven.
I think
it was seven,
dude. And
Oh my goodness.
But I'm a salesman at heart, right? So I was like, well, can we just figure out the lightest ones and I'll get rid of those and we'll just keep the five best. But
how'd they react?
I wish I had the stones to pull that off. I didn't. I panicked because I was still just a ball of nerves. For whatever reason, the obstacle getting into tournament fishing for me, and this was like small scale, I don't even know, 20 boats, but for me, it was like game seven of the World Series, right? Like I was nervous. I felt like the stakes were really high, and I panicked, dude. I just dumped them. I didn't even weigh them.
Walked down to the water.
Let him go. Like, all right.
Right on.
One of my first experiences as an on-boater, it was actually an all-star pro-am or draw tournament, they called it back in the day. And this had to be, God, like 89 or 90. It was a long, long time ago. And of course, I draw the one, I can't remember his name, but the one dude that has a cigar stuck in his cheek, right? Like right here. And he's rough and gruff.
Nice.
And just yells. Had the little Skeeter Starfire boat, right?
Manager at a used car dealership down the street.
And he backs you, or how did he do it? He had walkie-talkies, right? And he'd give you one. I think he launched me in his boat, or I was backing him up in his giant motorhome, right?
Yeah.
Just... It was something.
You get like a breaker coming across the airways.
Well, he just yells at you like, do this, do that. Anyhow, we get in the boat. We go out and we're fishing this reef, and he was throwing football jigs. And maybe that's why I enjoy throwing football jigs nowadays. But I didn't have any. And he goes, here, son, take one of these. Pitches me a football jig. And I'm like, cool, this thing's heavy. I can cast it a long ways. So I just launch it out there. And then he starts yelling at me, half a cast. Just because he knew what he was doing.
What do you mean half a cast? Like, don't cast it that far?
Yeah, because it was just a rock pile, okay. And I was going way over it, right? And
he
just had the boat nice and close, and he knew what he was doing. I was completely clueless.
Gotcha. Uh-huh.
And I think I broke a couple of his jig heads off, and it was just, yeah.
That's cool that he was sharing jigs with you, though.
It was, like, but it's like, I mean, I was just a kid.
And it wasn't shared weight? Or it was?
It was not, no.
So, dude, I mean,
it was awesome that
he was rough, cool. But he's telling you where to cast and giving you jig heads. That's something. Guy's got a good heart anyway.
No doubt.
Another time, too, in Canyon Bass, this was probably even earlier on than that. Do you remember Dick Barnhart by chance?
I don't.
Okay, so Dick was awesome. I mean, but you didn't know that until you got to know him.
Uh-huh.
He's so scary.
Hard candy
that's
shell,
funny,
soft.
Man. There's a lot of those in bass fishing,
oh,
really.
Oh, yeah. He was awesome. He would throw a confetti lizard. That's all he ever threw.
What's confetti look like, man?
It's just like
multicolored.
Like a birthday cake?
Yeah.
Birthday cake. That's what I was thinking.
Birthday
too.
Cake, yeah. And it was like, it was just a lizard, and he would Texas rig, and that's all he ever threw. He had this old Ranger, and I was looking for a partner to fish because that wasn't a draw deal. You just pair up with guys, right? And someone mentioned that I needed a partner for the next tournament. Dick's like, I'll take him. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So
Anyone else? Yeah. Any other take?
Yeah.
Anyone else got an empty backseat?
I don't know what my deal was, but I was just sketched out by him, right? And anyhow, we get out on the boat. I love the guy. He's awesome. And I believe he's passed away since. But, I mean, he was super old at the time and just absolute sweetheart. I mean, that's cool. Weird to say about a guy, but like,
no,
that's what
he
was. And he was just so rough on the exterior and so such a great person. It's pretty cool.
That is.
So.
That's cool. Dude, I said it, but I mean, there are so many of those guys in fishing.
There is.
You know, so many. I've got a handful out of that same club.
Yep.
So I fished the same club.
Yeah, Larry's.
10 years later, and Larry's the guy I think of, man. I mean, your first impression is like, wow, that guy's
a tough
definitely
cookie, right?
Tough. Yes. Yep. And, but dude, you know, they end up doing so much for you. They've got
Hardy's
soft spots.
Classic is, what's he say? He's like, I'm going to drink a sandwich and eat a pop. I remember he destroyed me one time. Like, he had caught five fish in like 16 minutes in one of these. I remember like the eighth tournament I fished. And I had him. He just like filled his live well, and you could tell he's just done. And he's like, I'm going to drink me a sandwich and eat me a pop. And he just sat down. And I was like, you going to run the trolling? I was like, nope, that's you. Like, okay.
I love it, dude. I love it.
Those are the memories, though, that like make like your younger years of fishing so awesome, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, maybe when we get older, we can do that for, some young kids.
My goal is to be that rough, grumpy old guy.
Intimidating. Yeah.
You're well on your way, man.
Burn.
It's not a burn. That's a compliment.
Yeah. I remember my first like real team tournament I fished. I'm fishing with a great guy. I fished with this guy, my friend Gil. He's still around. He's not fishing quite as much anymore, but he's retired. He was about to retire at the time, older guy. And it's kind of his first tournament too. He had been bass fishing for a long time, but he saw that I was really, really wanting to get into tournaments, and I was fishing with him a little bit at the time. He was a family friend, so he starts taking me to these tournaments. And I'm like 14, 15. And I remember that first tournament morning, like there's 150 boats in this tournament. It's a big team tournament. Team tournaments were rocking at the time. The economy was good. Everything was good. And we idle out and miss our boat number. Like, we have no idea like where to stage or anything like that. So we miss our boat number. And he's got a sweet boat. He had a Nitro 901 with a 200 on it. And like brand new, just like was my dream boat at the time. Thought it was so sick. And anyways, we had an early boat number. We missed the boat number. So we just take off out of the middle of the pack. And everyone's looking at us like, where the hell are those guys going and who are they, you know? And we run across the lake and get to our spot. And then we get there. And I realize, like, oh, my God, we don't have life jackets on. It's a rule in every tournament that you have to wear a life jacket when the motor's running. We didn't have our life jackets on. We were so anxious and excited and didn't know what was going on. So ultimately, then I'm thinking, well, they probably didn't even think we were in the tournament since we didn't take off from where everyone else was taking off. No life jackets. And at the time, we're fishing this lake that had a slot limit. It was hard to catch an over 16-incher. Not a great lake at the time. And, like, right away, dude, I catch, like, an 18-incher on a buzzbait. And, like, we're pumped up and excited, but I'm thinking, but we didn't have our life jackets on. We're going to get disqualified. We're going to win the tournament. I thought we were going to win the tournament because, like, we got one. And, dude, long story short, we ended up catching zero bass for the rest of the day. So we just dumped that sucker.
called
it a day. Live and learn on that one.
Yeah. It's amazing how rough it is in the beginning just figuring out those things.
It refines you, right? Like, it just teaches you so much. I remember the very, very first I showed up, our buddy Mark Pacella, Josh had introduced me to him, and it was going to be super fun. It was at Havasu, you know, traveled over there and just going to spend a weekend with some guys. I didn't know him or Jerry.
I wasn't
there,
and God, I wish I was there for this one.
Oh, it was a blast. But dude, I showed up rocking some really sweet aviators, but they were polarized, right? Thinking like that was just totally fine. Like, I'm just going to fish in some polarized aviators. Like, I got this back down. And he was nice enough. He lent me some sunglasses that were actually like,
he's like, don't wear these, bro.
Yeah, whatever you
don't
do.
Don't be seen wearing
these. Right.
But yeah, we talk about how, you know, back in the day we had all those, but still today, I mean, in a tournament, do you get the butterflies, Josh?
That's a good question. I don't terribly often anymore. What'll happen to me, like the first term of the season, I get butterflies. I'll get butterflies before practice starts a lot of times, believe it or not. But dude, you go so hard in those multi-day tournaments. I'm so tired by the time I had butterflies, my first Elite Series tournament ever. I was literally so nervous I was going to throw up. And I think I told this story on a podcast we did in the beginning, but our audio is so bad we didn't even play it. So I'll talk about it again real quick. But I ended up, it was at the Sabine River, like the most intimidating place to ever have a tournament, you know, and it was the first time anyone had ever been there. Now there have been five major tournaments there. People know where to go catch fish, but there had never been anything there. It's a saltwater place. It's somewhere people go to catch redfish.
Right.
And, you know, there was no information about bass fishing available. We didn't even know where to go. Like, you'd be in an area that Nick had gone and pre-practiced with me. You'd be in an area like, oh, this looks great. I'm going to catch them. redfish, redfish. It's like, damn, this is salt water. I need to go somewhere else.
Nothing was marked.
There's hidden no wake zones everywhere. And it's my first tournament fishing against all the big boys. And same thing, like I'm hoping the pre-tournament meeting, I've got to run like 70 miles to the one area where I caught some bass. And same thing, I'm petrified I'm going to run in no wake zone or take the wrong turn, get lost, you know, run up on a sandbar, hit an oil pipe, anything.
Everything
this place
is
crazy.
On the table.
So I get boat three, and I'm like, oh, my God.
God has a sense of humor. He's the best comedian of them all.
I'm sitting there that morning. I get to the ramp, and John Murray, that whole tournament, held my hand. He's like, it's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. You know, he's like, just go 40 miles an hour and let someone get in front of you. And I'm like, well, what if no one's going the same way as me? What am I going to do then? Or, you know, whatever. So thankfully, I've run like 20 miles down the intercoastal waterway, and someone passed me. And sure enough, 10 miles past that, they sat down and idled through a no-wake zone that I didn't know about.
Yeah. So. Karma. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I remember just sitting there before takeoff wanting to throw up. Everyone just like, all the guys are all comfortable, like chatting and laughing and rigging tackle. And I'm just like looking around like
it's not even
my
fair,
skin's
is it?
Crawling. Yeah. That was the last time. Yeah. It hasn't been like that since. But
yeah, I know. I always get butterflies at the meetings. Like,
100%.
So weird. Yep. I don't know what it
was.
That's
a good point.
Maybe it was just a lot of people in one room, or if it was just the who knows what it was.
There's an element of that.
You got the BSers. Like, I talked about this with Cliff. I've talked about it a bunch of times, but there's a bunch of dudes that are like talking about the doc talk, and you're like,
I'm on
them. I haven't seen anything close to what these guys are talking about. And they end up not catching
them.
Usually those guys that are saying that. Yeah. But they make you nervous
in that moment.
Yeah, for sure.
That's so funny. Well, right on. Well, we're about ready to roll this thing over to Billy. We had a good, we talked to him on the phone, had a good conversation. We gave you the background on Mike Hart. And one other thing before we roll to him, I want to talk a little bit about the steps that tournaments take now to prevent this type of stuff from happening. You know, anytime I'm talking to someone that has like no tournament experience or just curious about tournaments, a really popular question is like, don't people just cheat? And it's actually a valid question because there are a million different avenues that
one could
actually do that for sure. Exactly. But the tournaments have some really good steps that they take to prevent this from happening. You know, even at the local level, it's really common for these tournaments that they've got their ground rules written out, you know, and some rule books are longer than others. You know, you fish a local team tournament, the rules are going to be on one sheet of paper. Everyone can follow them. Super simple. It gets a little trickier when you're like fishing in the bigger pro-ams. I mean, they're actual booklets, and you need to know the rules because they're varying kind of every tournament. And some of the really simple stuff are like information.
It's universal.
It's the steroids of fishing, you know. You know, a lot of people get information. Almost everyone has at some point, and as long as they're doing it legally, it's all good. But, you know, I think that's probably in the professional tournaments, that's the
most likely.
Yeah, that's the thing that people question and wonder about for sure. But we have some really strict, we have polygraph tests that we take, and we've got at Major League Fishing, man, there's a dude that it's his full-time job to give lie detector tests to these guys and get to the bottom of everything that's going on and keep it straight and keep it good, and we feel really good about it.
Yeah.
Are they random tests? Are they where you finish? What are they?
They're random. The way it was when I was fishing bass, they'd usually nab two out of the top 10 randomly. So if you got a top 10, you knew there was a good chance you're getting one. And now what we're doing now, and I don't know what they're doing now at bass, but what we're doing at MLF, it's random. So everyone through the
Even
course of the year is going to get
whatever.
It. Yep. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's before the tournament, because again, that's where that would go down, would be before the tournament. But to my knowledge, nothing like that has gone down. It's been great. And it's because they have good
practices
rules against
in
it.
Place.
Absolutely. On a local level, you know, they still do lie detector tests. Like, I mean, I've taken a handful of them around here. Have you taken some, Rob?
Yes, I have. Back in the day, they weren't as common, but yeah.
Right on. And they're a little bit more low key. Like, you know, they got a dude that drives out there in a van and
unmarked white van,
1978 motorhome. Oh yeah, with the van front barely running. That's my experience.
Yeah, so. No, that's about what it still was the last couple times I had him. I remember I did one where I was really sick, and my nose is just like runny, and you can't move because it'll totally throw off the whole test.
You're so, dripping snot on the piece of paper.
It was brutal, dude. It's just running down my nose, running down my face, and I'd like shuffling, be like, "We got to start again. Try your best not to move." And I'm like, "Oh, jeez, dude, this is miserable, man.
Brutal.
That took so long, and everyone was like staring at me, like I was all shady because it took me an hour to get the lie detector test."
To me, the positive of if someone does cheat and they do get caught, they'll never step foot in another tournament. I mean, the fishermen take pretty good control of
it. It's kind of like a self-policing thing, right?
It really is. I mean, like car racing, I don't know a ton about car racing, but it seems like if you're not cheating, you're not trying type of deal. And it's more accepted, I guess.
Yeah, and there certain levels of self-policing probably exist in everything, right? Because like in the fishing community, you're all pitching in, right? You're paying your entry fees. You're pouring in your time, your effort. Like, it's just crap, right? Like, if somebody's shortcutting that, you're going to be pissed off, right?
So
You're absolutely, you're ready to take care of that problem, you know, once someone's been caught. And I don't remember in my long, illustrious 3-year career of drag racing, anyone like truly getting like,
were there grumblings?
Yeah, you know, and I the form of drag racing that I did was where you would have to select how fast you thought your car was going to go in the quarter mile, and then if you went faster than that, you would lose. It's kind of an interesting take on it, because it's not, even if you got there to the finish line first, if you went faster than the time you had stated, you would lose. So there were different ways that people tried to cheat, but I don't remember anyone ever just getting like caught red-handed. But there are certainly the, you know, the Mike Harts of that, too. And yeah, I think they die a death of, you know, public stoning, and you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
It's ugly.
They don't dare show back up. And,
right.
And you pray that anyone that ever got accused was rightfully accused. And they probably, I'm sure they were, man. I mean, but you feel terrible if someone was wrongly accused, because,
it's a big deal, right?
Dude,
I mean, like, that's,
you can't ever show back up.
You're not coming back.
Now with social media, you can't move. If this happened 20 years ago, you might be able to move
disappear
to Texas
and show up somewhere else. Yeah.
Become a viable Texas tournament angler, or vice versa. You know, move from Texas to Arizona, but you're done now, man. Yeah, it's
my deal with Mike Harts just it blows my mind that. I mean, how much weight was he shoving in the fish? I wish we would have asked him that. I mean,
it was roughly, and this is, again, I could be off by a half pound or something, but it was roughly like a pound. He was maybe a pound and a half. It was, you know, because
just
these weights, I think, were quarter
over,
ounce weights.
A pound and a half over 3 days?
A day.
A day, that's a lot. That's an extra
on a
fish.
Lake like me,
but
where
I'm just
it's
saying
just
he's
cookie
still,
cutters, you know.
But he still had to catch quality fish to do what he was doing.
You're right.
That's what's mind-boggling.
That's true.
To
he
me.
Was a good fisherman.
Yeah.
He
so why?
Right. Uh-huh. So he put a top 10 in the boat and was trying to win by cheating. And just there's
it's
no.
That's
what,
a good point,
it's a
right there.
Don't get that, man.
Approach, right?
I don't get that at all.
And you've got to, if you're a guy like that, you've got to have a passion for fishing, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't have. There's no way you would get that good without it being kind of your thing, right? And
right.
And that's the biggest thing for him is losing that, dude.
Mm-hmm.
That's such
you
a shame.
Yeah, you just don't go to Lake Mead and catch top 10 fish in a U.S. Open and not know what the heck.
And
you're
I don't know if he had the fish to win, like in that situation. But but you're right. I mean, win over time.
Yeah.
You know.
And you don't know. I mean, maybe it was the first time he cheated. Unlikely, but you know.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. We're not going to make any assumptions on any of that, but Billy did a really good job of just kind of explaining
handling
it from
it.
The other side. He handled it really well, and man, like, you know, in this interview, it's really interesting just to hear how it went down from the backside. And it's been 10 years since it happened, so a lot of the anglers out here might not have heard of this before, or the ones that did hear about it, it will be interested to hear it from Billy's perspective.
Unique perspective.
So hope you guys enjoy. Let's roll it over to that. Got you on. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it big time.
No problem. I appreciate being on, and I look forward to checking out some of your shows. I hear you guys are doing a kick-ass job.
Thanks. It's fun. Like I said the other day, it's an excuse for us to get together and, you know, BS about fishing during the middle of the off season. So every week. So that's pretty cool.
Off season. You guys have an off season?
Yeah. I mean, I guess we're not fishing every day right now, but dude, we did one episode, in the U.S. Open was kind of like the center point of the episode. It was we called it Toughest Bass Lake in America. And we talked about Lake Mead, and, hopefully people walked away from listening to that wanting to go fish the tournament more, but, we told some of our fun times there and some of our horror stories from that lake also.
Well, we appreciate you talking about it. I know you've got a lot of background with the U.S. Open. You fished it a bunch of times and have been there recently, and maybe that's what helped sell it out yesterday, January 2nd, with 280 pros. Pretty crazy.
Dude, yeah, that's amazing, and we won't take any credit. That's all you, Billy. I mean, we talked about you in the introduction, but, you've done a lot for Western fishing over the last 10 years since you took over at One Bass. And the first open I fished, Rob's fished a bunch of opens. And I think the first one I fished had like 90 something boats. I mean, did you ever fish one that had anything close to 280, Rob?
No, not even close to that. It's really impressive what you've done, Billy, with out West here. It's hard to get guys to show up, and you've certainly made that happen.
Yeah, well, it's a testament to, our economy right now. A lot of guys are doing real well. Most of the guys back when I first started in 2010, we had the pro-ams, the teams, and the regions, north, south, Arizona, you name it. They were spread out everywhere. And that was kind of where everybody was at. And one of the reasons I think there wasn't so many people fishing so many tournaments, because there's so many different options and organizations and people fighting for weekend permits and all that stuff. And, kind of augmented within the last 10 years to what we're doing now. And we have to thank some of our sponsors for telling us, kind of the directions they wanted to go a few years ago, because the U.S. Open is a premier event. Back when I started 2010 under Harvey Naslin, like you said, I think there was 117 boats at that tournament. And that's where I met Aaron Martins and Josh, and I met a bunch of guys. I was just a guy that was making fishing lures and loved to fish, that was out of construction industry myself because of 2008, and stumbled into that position. And Harvey's like, hey, you want to, I think you can do this. This is something you can do. Just taught me and gave me some tutelage, excuse me. But unfortunately, he was battling cancer, wasn't really letting anybody know about it. And in 2010, when he put on the Legends of the Masters, I don't know if you guys remember that night before the U.S. Open, where all the guys came and we had that dinner. And he basically looked at me after that dinner and said, Bill, it's all yours. And I'm like, what do you mean it's all mine? He's like, One Bass, it's you. You got it. You got it within you, and go for it. And I was like, oh, boy. never run a tournament in my life, and here I am at 2010 U.S. Open, and which was kind of crazy. A lot of different things happened at that tournament, but that's kind of guy I am. I just dig in. I'm a problem solver, and I kind of liked the opportunity and the challenge, really. And that was the year. You remember, Josh, and we don't always bring it up, but it was a big thing, and actually had a lot to do with everybody all of a sudden knowing who Bill Egan was when we caught my cart cheating at that 2010 U.S. Open.
That was unreal, man. I mean, it was huge news, and yeah, what a time to cut your teeth. I mean, you went from 0 to 100 real quick with that going on, and you don't have to go super far into it. I know it's, we like to talk about fun and positive things on the show, but it is interesting, especially from the tournament director's side. And this is a kind of a cool opportunity in this quick chat with you to hear about some things from the other side. What was that like? How did you even get tipped off to know that he might be doing this?
Well, yeah, the short story. I mean, I'm getting the chills right now because it was such a wake up. Hello. Welcome to the club. Situation, because I was in the big bait side of things before I got into One Bass, and it was a drama completely over there. It kind of got me used to it and smoothed out some of the hard edges I had. But I took the reins. We had run the first day of the U.S. Open that year with unknown, nothing going on, and everything was peachy keen. And it was day two. At the U.S. Open, Lake Mead, the park and recreations require you to fillet your dead fish so that they can be donated to the homeless or the local churches for the needy. And it was funny because on day two, I remember Byron Velvick fished that tournament, Aaron Martins, a whole bunch of guys were fishing that. And it was my introduction to a whole bunch of those guys. But you know, as a tournament director, you've got a lot of stuff going on, a lot on your plate. And after day two's weigh-ins, I was busy making sure that boats were still running and motors were working and the guys still had platforms to fish on. And if I needed to switch or bait or, you know, get co-anglers mixed up with a pro that did have a boat, you know, there's a lot of hectic kind of stuff going on that people don't realize behind the scenes. And as I was driving over to a mechanic area where the Mercury crew was working on boats, the fish and game lady tried to flag me down and said, you know, hey, I need to talk to you. And I actually thought she wanted me to help fillet fish. So I was like, yeah, I'll be there in a little bit. So I went over and chatted with Velvic and a few of the guys while some boats were being fixed and made sure everything was ready to go for, you know, day three. And as I was leaving, all of a sudden it dawned on me, I was supposed to go meet with the fish and game lady. And as I went over there, I parked, I got out of my truck and I'm walking over there and they're still filleting fish because back then, you know, we didn't have the technology we have. We're not using the mesh bags that we're using now. And, you know, a few more fish died back then. And so as I walked up, the fishing game lady said, hey, we got two problems and I need your help on them. And I'm like, okay, I'm a problem solver. Give it to me. And so the first one was a simple situation. One of the AAAs had dumped a whole bottle of Rejuvenate in the live well and actually killed the fish because there's just too much product.
Oxygenator.
Yeah, exactly. And I said, no problem. You know, we'll make an announcement to make sure to put the proper teaspoon or whatever the required amount is. And she goes, the second one's not so easy. And she reaches in her back pocket and pulls out a Ziploc bag with, I think, I can't remember, there was four or six weights in them, lead weights with snelled hooks on the end.
Unreal.
And when I saw that bag, my stomach dropped to the floor. I was numb, you know, because here I am running my very first U.S. Open, green as can be, and I've got the biggest controversial situation a tournament can have staring me in the face.
Yeah, you know, no matter what, it's not going to be smooth sailing this week.
No, you know, because you got a cheater. You know there's a cheater, but you don't know how you're going to handle it. And, you know, there was three fish and game people there, a couple of my volunteers, one of the local guys who we all know, Vern Price. And Vern Price loves to chat. And I immediately grabbed all four or six of the people that were there. And I said, look, nobody can speak a word of this until we figure out what we're going to do, because if it gets out, it's going to ruin the U.S. Open and cast a shadow of a doubt on this event forever. And seriously. So luckily, the lake is 45 minutes from anywhere. So it gives you time to think. And I drove the whole way back to the hotel thinking about the situation and how I could figure out how to catch this person and how we were going to deal with it. And, you know, it dawned on me that we keep record of dead fish, and there's a penalty, obviously, for weighing in dead fish. And whoever did this, most likely the fish were dead before we weighed them. So when we got back to the hotel, I had the girls go through all the weigh cards. And back then we didn't have the computer systems we have now. We manually wrote them down on pieces of paper. And we found three guys that had turned in three dead fish because the weights were found in three fish. And it was just random because the fishing game guy filleting the fish was like, hey, why don't we check the stomachs to see what they're eating randomly?
No way.
And picked up one that was just sitting in the, you know, the bucket, and it happened to have weights in it. So they searched all of them and found the weights. So we found only three anglers that had turned in three dead fish. So I had them earmark those cards, and John Cassidy back then was my bump master. I had him take an extra hand in searching the fish that those three guys weighed in. And when I saw the names, I didn't recognize two of them, but and I hadn't met the third, but you know, the guy, Mike Hart, who had ultimately ended up being, you know, you obviously heard of because up in LA, he had been undefeated in like 7 years. And I'm like, wouldn't it be interesting if it's that guy? So we go through the weigh-ins, and the three guys come across, or the first two guys come across, and we inspected the fish and nothing. And then Mike Hart stepped on the stage, and John was, you know, surveying the fish and looked at me and gave me a little wink. And so I was on the microphone with him. I reached in the bump tank and grabbed the first fish I could and squeezed the bill and felt something in it. And it was obvious that we had gotten him.
Wow.
So we weighed his fish, and then, you know, I put the mic down. I said, "Hey, Mike, there's a couple of people inside the stage that want to speak to you." And his face went white.
So, I bet.
So, you know, and then people can find out the stuff about that. But he paid his consequences, was banned for life, had a lot of bum things happen that you would think would happen after something like this has happened, you know, and lost his job. And anyway, so he paid his price. He's still hasn't fished a tournament since, but we moved on past that, you know, and unfortunately for Clifford Perch, it took a lot of his wind out of his sail winning that one that year. So, you know, the ironic thing about that whole story is nobody knew who I was. And at the end of that U.S. Open, that was when fishing forums were really kind of new and hot, and everybody loved to get on them and express their opinions and their thoughts. And I remember finishing the awards, going up in the hotel room about 11:30 that night and looking at the forums, and it was going crazy, wildfire. And everybody was saying what they thought, what they think they thought, and what they thought happened, and what they think they saw. And it was going sideways every which way. And I was like, no, this can't happen. And I got on this forum and I wrote a big just explanation, and I labeled it "The Truth and Nothing But the Truth."
Good for you.
Exactly what happened, how it happened, how we caught him, what we were going to do, and that was it. And don't let this go this way or that way. This is what happened. And I think the industry and the anglers saw that as, hey, this guy's, you know, he's right. He's above the line here. And the funny thing is, I went home right after the tournament. I was in Albertson's shopping for my family, and this lady behind me in the line kept staring at me, and I felt her. She was like on top of me, and I'm like, "Well, what's going on?" And I finally look at her. I go, "Can I help you?" She's like, "Yeah, you're on Yahoo." And she turns the phone around, and my face was the cover of Yahoo that day.
Whoa, that's wild.
Yeah, just for catching my
all
heart
the way over there
and the whole thing. But to get back on point, I mean, things are going great. We've got great sponsor help. You know, the industry kind of set the path a little while ago, what we were doing, you know, because they basically said years ago, they said, "Hey, if you're going to be doing the U.S. Open and all the teams and pro-ams, no, we'll see you at the U.S. Open." We're like, "What?" They're like, "Well, we want the bigger events. We like that U.S. Open style. We want those, that type of a, present. And so we together here at the company said, "Well, okay, we need to reduplicate the U.S. Open and do it in our backyard." So Clear Lake was the obvious choice. So we went to Clear Lake and we started the California Open there, which is exactly the same format as the U.S. Open, just a little less entry with the same shared weight format, which has a lot to do with our success also, is because the other organizations, as you know, most of the pro level tournaments are non-shared weight formats where you're fishing against the guy in the boat, which has its own animosity type, you know, feel to it, because it's not a friendly, fun environment when you're fishing as a team necessarily and trying to help each other catch a fish and not competing for water. So it creates an experience in a tournament that's unlike any other. And guys have told me, I've made lifelong friends with people that I've fished with, and they come back every year. And that's what's really helping. The people are invested, and they're coming back, and they're telling their friends, and they're getting them involved, and our sponsors are getting involved. I mean, Bass Cat and Mercury, you couldn't do any better right now. They're awesome. They're supporting the West Coast and supporting us heavily.
That's great, man. And I totally echo what you're saying on the format. It is so much fun. there's less pressure. There's enough pressure being in a tournament situation as it is. You know, you got a lot on the line, a lot of money, all that stuff. But to be able to actually team up with your partner, and for the listeners, it's a shared weight format. So, you know, you're going to capture hopefully a five fish limit in the boat total, not five fish for yourself and five fish for your co-angler. So I think it's a much better opportunity for the co-anglers to have a good experience and learn, but also the boaters too. And it's obvious, like you said, with all the hard work you're putting in, the prize packages that you've got, and then that format, it's all three of those things are going together. And that California Open and the Arizona Open, I know last year was the first year of the Arizona Open. And how many boats did you end up getting? 80-something? 90-something?
No, we had 76, 78 boats the first year, and which was...
Look at this year.
Well, you know, it was pretty amazing. Right after the U.S. Open this year, where we had 254 boats, literally between that event and November, we basically sold out, because we were originally going to max the field for the Arizona Open and the California Open at 150 boats. We saw that obviously with the success of the U.S. Open and limiting the field, it creates that drive for people to get in or not miss it. And obviously with the lower deposit amounts that we created, it gave people, you know, an opportunity to get in with less investment at that time to hold their spot. But because I was in the hospital having surgery, there was nobody to turn off the shopping cart for the Arizona Open and the California Open. And we went from 150 to now we're sitting on 192 for Arizona and 178 for the California Open, looking to close them out at 200 boat fields this year.
That's crazy, dude. It's amazing to see a wintertime tournament at Havasu with 200 boats. That's huge props. That's incredible.
Well, it has to do with bringing back the point system, because we didn't have enough events to have a points race. And now that we have three events, we could bring back the points race. So Jay Wright, one of our pro anglers from Life Source Water, called me personally and said, hey, I want to bring the old Daiwa Cup back, because you've done such an awesome job bringing this circuit back to where it needs to be. We need to have a good carrot at the end of the year. So he put up $10,000 cash for the pro angler of the year that fishes all three events and ends up in, you know, highest in the points race, which is awesome, because now a lot of other sponsors are jumping in and wanting to be a part of that. And you know, what I hope to do is get another event going, hopefully maybe next year, where we can have three open events and then get the US Open to be a standalone event again.
That's and
cool. Make some small changes to the US Open that would set it even further apart. I mean, last year when we changed the payout format and increased basically modified where the money went and our payout structure for the US Open to make the first place check be 100,000 plus the Basscat boat and Mercury motor worth, you know, $64,000. It really turned everybody's head and made the US Open one of the three highest paying tournaments in the nation. And it's a standalone one-time event.
That's impressive. And yeah, that's why so many boats showed up.
Exactly. And, you know, really, it's unfortunate and fortunate that we've sold out at 280 deposits already. But, you know, it's so early. I mean, it's 10 months ahead. Last year when we sold it 5 months ahead of time, sold it out, it was a record breaker. I mean, now we've just broken that again by doing it 10 months in advance.
For sure. I'm sure there'll be some guys on the waiting list that, you know, that hope to get in. Hopefully they do if they want to get in. But that's cool, man. That's amazing. And huge kudos for that. Let's I had one other question I wanted to ask you,
sure,
too, because I don't want to keep you too long. In your years of doing this now, 10 years, the U.S. Open, California Open, Arizona Open, are there any, like, bags of fish or single fish that were caught that really stand out to you? I mean, what off the top of your head, what are a couple of the most memorable, like, weigh-in moments or just fish that you, most impressive fish you've seen over these years?
Well, you know, obviously there's one of our three lakes that we go to that has the opportunity to catch a fish of a lifetime at, you know, it's voted top 10 lakes in the nation almost every year, and that's Clear Lake. And over the years, you know, like most lakes, they cycle through, and Clear Lake's, you know, it's on the rebound again. It had a few slow years where, I mean, God, when I first started running tournaments there, the average fish weight was 5.5 pounds. You know, so we're
it's laughable, dude.
We were weighing 25 pound bags times however many guys signed up for that event. It was nuts. You know,
you're like 25.8 pounds next. 25.2 pounds next.
Mm-hmm. So, and it changed, you know, went down to about 2.5 pounds a couple years ago, but it's gone back up. And I think we're back up to about a 4 pound average now, which is nice. But I mean, last year, Noy Villasane won the California Open and beat the entire field by 20 pounds. And he weighed, I think, was over 80 pounds for 3 days at Clear Lake and just caught some monsters. And that one kind of is, over the 10 years, that's got to be the biggest one. Well, it is the biggest one that we've had. And I fish Clear Lake a lot. And the lucky thing for me is wherever I go, I always get to fish with the best guys around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's nice.
So, you know, when I go there, I get to fish with Paul Bailey. And, you know, he always laughs because I always kick his butt whenever we go fishing with bigger fish. And I'm like, no, no, no. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be catching that fish, man. He literally calls the cast out for me. You know, don't cast there, don't cast here, cast right there. And it's an awesome fishery. There's been some good bags at Havasu that were surprising. I mean, gosh, I can't think of his name right now. Clifford Perch has brought in, you know, a good bag on day three. And Stephen Lamb a couple of years ago. Not Stephen Lamb, Bobby Lanham.
Whack. Oh, at the U.S. Open. He was fishing with our buddy Alex. And we can go to detail. That's what we will next podcast.
Yeah. He came in on that, yeah, that was an impressive bag. So obviously that one sticks out in my head. But we've had some good ones. There's been some funny situations, you know. I mean, U.S. Open, you're in Las Vegas, a lot of things can happen. I remember one year, I'm not going to say any names, but I think it was the first day of the U.S. Open, went downstairs at 3 o'clock in the morning to get ready to go do inspections and get things going, and one of the anglers is still sitting at the table gambling.
Oh, see, this is the good stuff. Did he make it to the lake?
I'm running over to my, you know, to my truck, and I'm like out of my peripheral. I'm like, what? Did I just see what I thought I saw? And so I walk over and I'm like, dude, you better get your stuff together, and if I smell anything on your breath, you're not launching today.
Yeah. He's got a co-angler that's waiting for him.
Yeah, no, he got there in time because I left, you know, 3 hours early. This was early. We had plenty of time, but I couldn't believe he stayed up all night gambling. He actually came in with a good bag that day.
Of course he did.
Yeah, but, you know, there's good. We've had some scary situations, as you know. I had to cancel that day, 2018, I had to cancel one day at the U.S. Open, which has never been done in the history of the U.S. Open, which I'm glad I did, because somebody would have died that day, if not a couple people.
Yeah, we commend you for that one, man. That is way better than the damage that would have been done out there that day.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was crazy. And the outpouring from the wives, girlfriends, and sisters that I got that day was crazy.
I bet. There would have been a lot of worried wives and mothers and sisters, like you said, out there, man. I mean, that lake is absolutely brutal on those types of days. So
they all said thank you, because that knucklehead would have gone, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And see you in the back of the Overton in a couple hours. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's been a great 10 years. Actually, this month is my 10-year reunion with Western Outdoor News and Juan Bass.
Well, that's cool, man. I think that's a great way to kind of wrap this thing up. We're thankful to have you, you know, directing tournaments out west and just part of the industry. And I've you know, I've known you basically that entire time. I got to go fish Mexico with you a few years ago. And before I let you go, dude, do you still remember that rat that you lost?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Dude, so we're on this flight. We're on this flight. I've got Rob here. And for our listeners, we're on our flight down to Mexico. Billy and I had met in Phoenix, and we're flying down there to fish with Berkeley. And Billy's got a hand-carved rat that he's stoked to fish. He just can't wait to throw this thing. Who had made the rat?
I think that was a buddy of mine from Irvine Lake. It was, I think it was called the OD rat. Some of the guys listening will know about it.
Right on. So we get there at night and it's already dark and we sit down, we're eating dinner, you know, getting ready for the next day. And he's like, I just can't take it. I got to walk down to the water and throw this thing. So was it the first cast?
I think it was the first cast.
His, you know, his braid had dug in, I guess, on the cast, and it was like 30-pound braid maybe, and it snapped. And
60.
He lost the rat. 60-pound braid. Oh my God. That's just it. You came up so bummed, man. You were so bummed.
that was the little mouse one, wasn't it? The small mouse.
I just remember it was a rat or a mouse.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That. Yeah. It floated away. We never found it. Somebody found it one day.
Yeah, found it in a bass's belly. Probably got scooped up by a 12-pounder floating across.
I've had that happen before, where I've casted off a rat or a floating bait and watched it get sucked by a fish.
No way.
Yeah.
That's great.
I also, one time, crazy story. One time I was fishing with a buddy. We do a lot of night fishing with big floating rats and stuff. And my buddy snapped off a rat, and it was on braid also, so it was dark, couldn't see it. I made a random cast where I thought it had landed, and reeling my thing in, and I'm like, I feel something. I'm not sure. Literally, the tip of my hook had caught through the braid and drug his rat back to shore. So I caught his rat with my hook, just the tip of my hook hooked onto his braid line. Pretty crazy, but yeah, we've done a lot of dumb things for swim baits.
That's cool. And hey man, we'd love to have you back on at some point to actually like dive into the big bait fishing. I know you made baits and stuff like that, so that would be actually a pretty interesting podcast if we could steal you at some point later this year, man.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I know all the guys and a lot of the old stories and all that, and but I want to thank you for having me on. You know, without the support from Western Outdoor News, which has been, you know, a weekly paper out here in California for 66, 67 years, and the Tulliger family, I wouldn't be here. We wouldn't, Juan Bass wouldn't be where it's at. And we thank all you guys, the anglers who have supported us, and appreciate you giving us the opportunity to talk about it.
Awesome, man. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. You're a great storyteller too, dude. So we all appreciate the stories and everything you do. And yeah, we'll have you on again soon. Thank you very much.
Sounds good, guys. Happy New Year.
Thanks, Billy. See ya.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast, guys. We really appreciate you guys subscribing, rating, and sharing the show. It means the world to us and it helps us out a bunch. Keep hitting us up with your feedback, and moving forward, if you've got questions, you know, ideas for show topics, just stuff you want to hear us talk about, please drop it in the iTunes review section or send me a message on Instagram or Facebook. You can reach me at Josh_BertrandFishing on both platforms, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks a lot.